In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you.
This bill, for the first time in 30 years, allows for the taxpayer funding of abortions.
When Christians say, "I'm not going to get involved in those things," what we've done, we have now not only abdicated responsibility, but we have absolutely given confirmation to the utter destruction of everything we're afraid to touch.
Today we are celebrating the birth of our Prophet Muhammad, who was born on this day. It's a great day of the Muslim world. The Prophet gave us this religion, which is a religion of peace.
It's true that he was a violent man. In fact, he was, if you will say, the first Muslim terrorist.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Well, heterosexual couples, because they have the right legally to marry, take the question of marriage quite seriously. It's not just something you casually propose. It's not something that you say, "Well, honey, I wish I could, but it's illegal, so I can't." Not with heterosexual couples. Well, now homosexual couples in many places are gaining the legal right to marry. And maybe all of the theoretical talk about marriage as society's imprimatur, things like that, the symbolism of marriage, is falling away with the real prospect of actually having to get married if you've been talking about it so long as an abstract right. We're going to talk about the reluctance of some homosexuals to get married here in the first half hour, this hour of Issues, etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute will be our guest to talk about same-sex marriage and some who, even though they can, may not want to. And then we'll spend the rest of today's show talking with Dr. Jean Edward Veith of Patrick Henry College about sin and grace. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 16th of March. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at @issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Is it time for many same-sex couples to put up or shut up on the issue of marriage?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's time to put up or shut up in the District of Columbia, and the people are having this conversation because they've never had to face it before. And some of the people in the article that I sent you are talking about the fact that, well, you know, it used to be you could go to Denmark and get married, then you could go to Canada and get married, then you can go to Massachusetts to get married. Well, now we can get married right here in the District of Columbia, so how about it, you know? And so all the kinds of reluctances that one sees amongst cohabiting couples, I think, are coming to the fore. But to read the article, what you would see is that all of those reluctances and foot-dragging and all that stuff that people go through when they're not really sure they want to commit, it's all covered over with self-righteous, grandiose-sounding political reasons for why they shouldn't get married. So it's really, it's quite an interesting dynamic, actually.
Isn't it interesting that the sexual revolution, of which the same-sex marriage is the latest manifestation, if you will, the sexual revolution that told us, as a matter of gospel truth, that marriage is just a piece of paper, that it is meaningless, if not unnecessary, perhaps even harmful to society, now has some of the strongest advocates, albeit for same-sex marriage?
Well, yes, that's a very striking thing. And actually, some of those people couldn't give a nickel for marriage until they discovered that maybe possibly gays could get married, and now they're all in favor of marriage, you know. But the point about that is, Todd, as we've talked about on this show many times before, the point of it is that what they're calling marriage is really a very stripped-down, neutered version of marriage, shall we say. I mean, literally neutered version of marriage, because it's marriage... a marriage institution that doesn't have anything to do with bringing man and woman together. It doesn't have anything to do with crossing the gender divide. It doesn't have anything to do necessarily with procreation and lifelong commitment to children and to one another. Those things are now peripheral to marriage, and because those are peripheral to marriage, simply lifestyle additional add-ons, if you happen to like that sort of thing, because all of that's been marginalized, now we can all say, oh, isn't marriage great? Because all that's left of marriage is I love you, you love me, we're a big happy family, and the state approves of us, and isn't that nice? That's what's left of marriage. And so all kinds of people who despise the actual guts of marriage, of what marriage was, that it had something to do with gender differentiation and people completing one another and complementing one another within the marriage institution, you know, all of those people who hated that part, now they're all enthused about marriage. But even within that set, Todd, what is surprising to me, or I don't know, I probably shouldn't be surprised, there are still people within the gay community that are not enthused about marriage, that never were enthused about marriage. And so what's coming to the fore is where they have achieved the objective of same-sex marriage, people are being freer to speak out and say, you know, marriage kind of stinks anyhow. We didn't really want this. This is kind of an old-fashioned fuddy-duddy institution. And, you know, we queers, actually, there's actually a special term for it. The queer theory is that we're ever so beyond all of that, and we can express our sexuality any way we want, including anonymous sex, including non-committed sex, and so on and so forth. So the fissures within the gay community are becoming more and more apparent as they get more and more success. They're willing to let the public see that they have this difference of opinion even within the gay community itself.
But we have been told in the last couple of years that homosexuality is about lifelong, committed, monogamous relationships, and the very respectable gay couple that lives at the end of the cul-de-sac and has six dogs, or the very respectable gay lesbian couple that lives out in the village someplace and pays their taxes and all that kind of stuff. That was the picture that was painted for us of American homosexuality.
Well, that's right. But isn't it interesting that after the Prop 8 trial closed, within 2 weeks of the Prop 8 trial closing, the New York Times published an article that reported on a study showing that half of gay men believe that monogamy is not important to their relationship. You know, half, and that's what they reported. And I think it is very telling that there are some real differences in the way that relationship is viewed, in the way that marriage is viewed, and so on, within the gay community. And they've basically been keeping the lid on those people, you know, who have those views, because they're spoiling that nice, pretty picture that you described. And you know, the other thing we've been told, Todd, we've been told that same-sex marriage is so crucial for the well-being of same-sex couples that the practical difficulties are just unbelievably burdensome, and we can't even imagine how terrible it is for them, and so on and so forth. Well, if that's the case, then holding out and not getting married because of these, you know, kind of trivial political reasons that they seem to be citing in the Washington Post, that doesn't make any sense at all. You know, I mean, people saying, oh, we're not going to get married until there are federal benefits, until it's national everywhere. We're protesting. We're holding out. You know, if it was really so onerous to be living together without the benefit of marriage, they would be rushing to the altar. And so I think a lot of this behavior is kind of undermining the public arguments that have been made up until this time.
Okay, two quick final questions here. Tell me what Suzanne Scott, director of women's gender studies at George Mason University, means when she says this, quoting from the Washington Post story: "There's a whole segment of the gay community for whom marriage equality seems a bit way too heteronormative. Some would even argue that marriage is an outdated norm based on archaic rules." What is Suzanne Scott saying?
Well, that's the kind of person I'm talking about. She's telling you exactly what she's confirming what I was just saying a moment ago. The idea that that it's normal to be heterosexual, and that the things that heterosexual people take for granted, such as monogamy and marriage and having kids and all of that kind of stuff that's normal for heterosexuals, there's no reason any of that should be considered normal and treated as normal. There is no reason a person of same-sex attraction, of a gay orientation or lesbian orientation, there's no reason we should aspire to those things. That is what some of the people within the gay community are saying. She's just pointing that out. And that's perfectly true, that there are people who believe that, that they think it's a relief to not be constrained by the norms that say you get married, you have kids, you settle down. If you screw around on the side, that's a bad thing to do. You know, there are people who don't want to live by those norms. And I within reason, am willing to say, okay, you don't have to. But I think it's a little much for that same community to turn around and demand of the rest of us that we redefine the institution of marriage and the institution of parenthood in order to accommodate what's really a subset of the gay community. I think that's really appalling, frankly, that they should demand as a right something that not even everybody in their community even wants to take advantage of, especially when you couple that with the fact that redefining marriage in the District of Columbia has imposed enormous costs on other people, most particularly the Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington has discontinued some of its services, is no longer permitted to do contracts with the city. They've had to rewrite their health care benefit rules. All kinds of things they're doing in response to redefining marriage, and now we have it. You know, it's like you gave somebody this big present and they don't even want it. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, couldn't there have been some other way to solve the problems? If there really were problems here that same-sex couples needed to have solved, isn't there some other way to solve them without imposing these kind of costs on other people? I can hardly believe it now.
Folks, check out the website for Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute. Just go to ours, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, Dr. Jean Edward Veith of Patrick Henry College will be our guest. We're going to begin a six-part series with him on Reformation theology. Today, sin and grace. Stay tuned. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.